And the closing arguments in the murder trial of South African athlete Oscar Pistorius have begun in Pretoria. Prosecutor Jerry Nell has wrapped up his argument that Oscar Pistorius deliberately murdered his girlfriend Reeva Steenkamp on Valentine's Day last year. Today, the defence will follow. The double amputee Olympic runner has always denied murdering his girlfriend, saying he mistook her for an intruder. Judge Masipa is expected to adjourn the trial after hearing the arguments to consider her ruling. Marius Du Toit is a former South African state prosecutor, magistrate, and now criminal defence lawyer, and he's with us now from Pretoria. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, James. Thanks for having me.
So, to your mind, do you think the prosecutor has proved to Judge Thokozile Masipa beyond reasonable doubt that he intended to kill Reeva Steenkamp?
Well, I think from the outset we must understand that the defense always had an uphill battle, James. You know, it was never a whodunit. It was always a case of whether Oscar could justify his actions. And I think the state has really succeeded in putting a case forward to justify at the very least an inference of murder. And whether the judge will, of course, rule that and whether the judge will accept those arguments is, of course, a different scenario. But I definitely think the state has done very well in their prosecution of this matter.
So what will then be the challenge faced by the defence team today?
Well, they've got a massive uphill battle, James. You know, the reality is that they had a client that testified and presented at the very least two different versions, which were not reconcilable. They had a number of expert witnesses that really did not come across that competent. And their own witnesses did not take the matter much forward. So the defence really has been a bit disjointed during the trial. And I think they really have to do everything at this stage to try and highlight the most positive points of their case and, of course, try and poke holes into the prosecution's argument. But I do believe that it's going to be very tough. The best thing in their favor is the fact that the scales are always tipped in the accused's favor because his version only has to be reasonably possibly true. Even if the court does not believe him, the test still remains the same.
Beyond reasonable doubt.
Beyond reasonable doubt, the state must prove his guilt, but his version only has to be reasonably possibly true, and the test goes further to say even if the court found him to be untruthful, the test still is his version reasonably possibly true, even though I don't believe what he testified during the evidence.
I see, and these are the questions, of course, before Judge Thokozile Masipa herself. There's no jury. She's been subdued till now, not giving much away. Will this change when she has the opportunity to directly question the defence team?
Well, I would expect so. You know, the interesting thing is usually from the arguments that are presented by the legal representative, you tend to find out exactly where the judge is thinking and what a frame of mind is with regards to your argument. So usually the rule of thumb is the person that takes the hammering during or the legal team that takes the most hammering from the judge is going to get the short end of the stick when it comes to judgment. And Judge Masipa has really been exceptionally reserved in this regard. She hasn't done much during the trial to show her cards. And even when Harry Nell was being questioned by her, it was very subtle. And there was only one or two aspects that she really clarified with him. Whether that's going to be the same with Barry Roo is a very good question. And I think we'll only obviously know tomorrow when that now proceeds. But I somehow think she might get more involved, but I don't think it's in her nature to get vigorously involved, but she definitely will get involved.
Okay, and how long do you anticipate she will take before she announces her ruling? Will there be a rest period for her to consider?
Yeah, James, as far as I understand, the record or the transcript, the typed record of what has been testified in court is in excess of 4,500 pages. And, the heads of argument, apparently the defense's heads of arguments, I think, are 360 pages. So it's quite voluminous. You know, the reality is that for her and the assessors to meticulously comb through the evidence as contained in the transcript is going to take a while. And I'd be surprised if we get a judgment within the next month. In fact, I heard this evening thrown around possibility of 6 weeks, but it's difficult to say at this stage.
Well, and this will be, 6 weeks, the judge simply reflecting on the transcripts and thinking to herself, weighing the evidence.
Absolutely. What she will do is she will obviously, when she starts her judgment in 6 weeks' time, firstly, she will consult her two assessors, because I understand the two assessors are not laymen. They are legally trained, but they can overrule her. So she could end up giving a minority judgment and the assessors giving a majority judgment. But if, of course, the decision is unanimous, then she will hand the judgment down. But what will happen ultimately is she will summarize all the evidence that has been presented, and then she'll start dealing with the issues in dispute, and then she'll evaluate every witness and make a credibility finding on every witness, and then she'll come out and pronounce. After discussing legal arguments, she'll make a finding. So if the heads of argument consists of 360 pages for the defense, you can bet your boots the judgment's going to be very lengthy.
Interesting. So if all three parties agree, that is the judge and the two assessors, and does the unanimity necessarily lead to a harsher sentence, assuming it's a guilty verdict?
Not at all. Not at all. The sentence will be dictated by what the factual findings are. And let me illustrate it for you, James. If the court finds that Oscar Pistorius chased Reeva Steenkamp down the corridor, that she hid in the bathroom, that he came to the door knowing that she was in the bathroom and then fired 4 shots into the door, deliberately trying to kill her. If the court found him guilty of murder under those circumstances, keeping in mind that murder carries a minimum sentence of 15 years if premeditation is not found, then the court can very easily deviate from that 15 years and impose 20 years if she wants to, because of the set of facts that she found. If, however, she finds him guilty on murder, but on his own version, let's say she says, that, listen, I accept the scenario that you thought there was a burglar, but the way you discharged 4 shots into a door, you deliberately intended to kill even the burglar. And you were reckless in hanging your gun, and your belief wasn't reasonable. Then you can still have a conviction for murder, but then she might deviate from it and give him a lesser sentence of maybe 12 years, because the Act prescribes a minimum sentence. But the court can only deviate from that if the court finds compelling reasons either way. And then, of course, if the court finds he was negligent in killing her, then, of course, he's facing a minimum sentence of 5 years. But once again, the court can elevate that to maybe 8 or 9 years should she wish to do so. So her factual findings, James, are going to be crucial in what sentences she hands down. And, of course, and at the end of the day, what will happen to Oscar? How many years he'll go to jail if he goes to jail?
When you say if the court finds he was negligent in killing her, what does that mean, negligent in killing her but not guilty of murder?
Yes, what happens is, if he's found guilty of culpable homicide, what that will mean is that the court could not find that he intentionally killed her. So that would mean you'll only get a verdict of guilty on culpable homicide after the court has entered a verdict of not guilty on murder. So the court will say, if the court finds him guilty of murder, the court will say if she found premeditation in his action, or she'll say, I just find him guilty of murder. If, of course, she says, listen, I'm not convinced that he murdered her, and she finds him guilty of culpable homicide, then, of course, he's not guilty on the murder, but then, of course, he would be sentenced on the culpable homicide. But I'll be honest with you, many commentators here, and, of course, we're all very cautious because we do understand the sub judice, which means the matter's ongoing. You're not supposed to preempt what the final ruling is going to be. But I think there's sort of consensus that Oscar is in deep water at this stage.
Nonetheless, let me ask you, what would be the very best case he could hope for? How could he walk free if the lowest test for his incarceration is simple negligence?
Yeah, the difficulty that he has, James, is the fact that for him to argue that he should be acquitted altogether, he would have to show to the court that he was not even negligent in discharging 4 shots. Now, of course, he always intentionally pulled the trigger, but the question is whether he was negligent in dealing with the death, or whether he negligently caused the death, whether he was reckless in causing a death and acted in a way different to the reasonable man or the reasonable disabled man would have acted in his circumstances. And if the court's not able to find that, then, of course, the court could acquit him. But let's just examine that for a moment, James. You must remember, he fired 4 shots into a door believing there was a person behind the door, and he believed there was a threat. But realistically speaking, there was no threat. Why did he not discharge shots into the cubicle where the shower was? Why did he not just discharge a shot into the ceiling? I mean, he had so many options. Why did he fire 4 shots and not 1 shot? So there were so many things he could have done, which you would expect a reasonable person like you and I would have done in the circumstances. And it was not there. So for him to get past corporal homicide would really be a virtually impossible task. So I think best case scenario for him, in my view, would most probably be a conviction of corporal homicide. And of course, worst case for him would be a conviction of premeditated murder, which will result in a 25-year minimum sentence, which is, in our terms, a life imprisonment. But you become eligible for parole after having served 25 years.
Marius du Toit, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, James.
He's a former South African state prosecutor, former magistrate, and now a criminal defense lawyer.